Davis was tired of Johnson's retreating without a fight. He wanted to see a real battle to save the city. It's important to remember this in judging what Hood did next. In retrospect, Hood was chastised again and again and again, both by contemporaries and by generations of historians for taking the offensive at Atlanta, as we'll see, and for losing so many soldiers. That's what he was expected to do. We have to give him that much credit. It's much like Ambrose Burnside when he took command of the Army of the Potomac in November of 1862. He went on and fought the aggressive Battle of Fredericksburg, not very imaginative, was heavily criticized later. But he also knew that he was under the gun to make something happen in Virginia. I think it's important for us to understand the context within which some of these failed operations took place. Hood is supposed to change things at Atlanta. He's supposed to make things happen. And in one sense, he was just the man to do that. He'd been born in Kentucky, graduated near the bottom of his West Point class, served 6 years in Texas before the war, and in effect became an adopted son of Texas. He led the famous Texas Brigade in Lee's army at Gaines's Mill. It was called Hood's Texas Brigade, really, for the rest of its history. And he subsequently achieved a reputation as a fierce fighter at Second Manassas and at Sharpsburg and elsewhere. He went up through the ranks, became a division commander quite soon. Wherever he led troops, it seemed there would be successful attacks and very high casualties. Lee once said of Hood, he was all lion and none of the fox. He was known as a man who would gamble at long odds. One federal general remembered that in a pre-war poker game, Hood bet a great deal of money without having even a pair in his hand. Now, that's perhaps an apocryphal story, but it sheds light, I think, on Hood's reputation as a man who was willing to risk a very great deal, even in difficult circumstances. He was a tall, large man for his time, 6 feet, 2 inches tall, blonde, only 33 years old at this point in the war. The war, however, had taken a cruel toll on what had once been a robust and impressive figure. He'd lost the use of one arm from a wound at Gettysburg on July 2nd. He'd never regained the use of that arm. And he lost a leg at the hip at Chickamauga, the kind of wound that most people did not live through during the Civil War. To have a leg amputated at the hip usually meant that you weren't going to survive. Hood did survive. By the time of Atlanta, he had to be strapped into his saddle. After the war, he would move to New Orleans, where he and his wife and one of their children died in a yellow fever epidemic in 1879, leaving 10 orphans. But now Hood is in command in Atlanta, and very quickly, a series of battles that have come to be known as the battles for Atlanta, three major ones, took place in rapid succession. Let's set the stage. After withdrawing from the Chattahoochee River line on July 8th and 9th, Joseph Johnston had taken up a position on the south side of Peachtree Creek. That placed the defending Confederates only about 3 miles north of Atlanta. And it was in that position that Hood found himself when he took command. Once across the Chattahoochee, Sherman advanced against Atlanta in 3 separate columns. Remember, he commands what we would call an army group. He has 3 armies. And he uses George H. Thomas's Army of the Cumberland to advance against Atlanta from the north. He uses Schofield's Army of the Ohio to come from the northeast. And he sent James B. McPherson's Army of the Tennessee on another of the wide turning movements that he had employed, Sherman had employed, as he moved south from Chattanooga toward Atlanta. He hoped that McPherson could swing out to the east and come in against Atlanta from that direction and perhaps sever Atlanta's rail communications to North Carolina and South Carolina in the process. Just before he was removed by Jefferson Davis, Joseph Johnston had put together a plan to strike Thomas's army just as or after it crossed Peachtree Creek. That's what Johnston finally told Davis he wanted to do. Davis doubted that Johnston would actually mount much of an offensive, and Davis may well have been right about that, and of course had put Hood in charge, as we know. Removed Johnston, put Hood in charge. What Hood essentially did was take Johnston's plan to strike along Peachtree Creek and build on that for his own offensive blueprint.